Well, today I come from Stone Cold Stupid, Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, Crazy Town, the center of the swamp. Just hoping they find some good old-fashioned North Dakota, Minnesota, well, I should say Western Minnesota, Eastern Montana common sense, crying out loud. This is unbelievable. PetroServe USA, home cook and grab-and-go convenience. I've ate pretty well in Washington, D.C., not too bad. Not Taco Mac good, though, like they have in Castleton today, or beef stew. I could go for some beef stew. I did have a potato lentil soup that wasn't bad last night. Salisbury Steak in Fargo, West Main Avenue, West Fargo, lasagna or sesame orange chicken. Asian dish, new one in Grand Forks today out of the Erickson Family Test Kitchen, Wahpeton sweet and sour chicken and Salisbury Steak in Harwood. I just eat much better when I'm home cooking. Two sides. When you go to a restaurant in Washington, D.C. and say, I'll have a side of corn and mashed potatoes with gravy, they don't serve it here.
Am I
going to the wrong places or what?
Perhaps. The best thing at restaurants around here, I'd say about half of them or more of the restaurants I go to here, the side dishes are family style.
Right.
So you order mashed potatoes, you get enough for four people.
I like that. But yeah. I just want simple mashed potatoes. I don't want foofy with stuff in it.
I see. Yeah.
Green things. And
you don't like green things?
Nothing green.
You don't like chives?
I want chives I'll take in moderation.
Yeah, see, you're very hard to please, I can tell.
Yeah. Talk Radio Town Hall today, coming to you literally from the United States Capitol. We'll talk about the stupid in a minute. We had some calls before before you came on, and one of them I thought was very interesting. A guy said, why don't airlines pay for the air traffic control system, the safety, all of that? And I said, well, yeah, maybe they should in this little shutdown. He said, no, always. I don't get it because I don't fly. Other people do. Why? And I started thinking, well, I quickly did what I do. I'm like trying to get logic, say, well, isn't that a function of government? Safety, keeping the skies safe. That should be a primary function of government. But we also have $38 trillion in debt. So react to that. What do you think of the idea of having the airlines fund this?
It's an interesting concept. And there may very well be some funding from the airlines, or at least from air users, if you will, because the transportation system on the service transportation side is funded by user fees, called the gas tax and some other fees. And we should talk about that sometime, because we need to find ways to generate more revenue, because more and more vehicles don't buy gas, right? And so we have to figure that out. But that's, and I'm the chairman of that committee, by the way, so we'll talk about that later. So that's not without reason. I would say, though, Scott, to your point about a fundamental or foundational really responsibility of government, one of the very few things that the Constitution of the United States actually gives the federal government authority over, and therefore responsibility over, is interstate commerce. And so airlines largely move people and products throughout the country and internationally, obviously. So but that doesn't mean there couldn't be a dedicated funding source, if you will. It's just our federal government is largely funded by income taxes, because that's actually in the Constitution as well.
People are confused. People that voted for you, people from all around the sound of our voice that are just scratching their head over this craziness that's going on right now with the shutdown. Back up and give me a little sense of the founding fathers. Do you think they'd say move Washington, D.C. to Watford City right now? This has just gone off the rails. Would they say this is why we designed the government we did and give you tools to do this? Are we in a very different place? Because it's confusing the daylights out of people. So what's your take on that?
So it's a great question. And because, as you know, one of the big discussions going on is, are sort of structural changes. Should the Senate become a small, version of the House of Representatives, where there aren't these 60-vote margins or filibusters or, where you have a simple majority to do everything? And that's reasonable to question. When the founders created, though, the bicameral Congress, they made doing big things hard on purpose. I mean, they were very intentional about that. Having said that, and by the way, before anyone suggests that they could never have imagined a country this big, they knew how big the potential of the country was. In fact, when they created the Senate, that to me, that's one of the most fascinating parts about the Constitutional Convention or Continental Congress was that they had the biggest argument over whether to have a Senate or a House, House of Lords or House of Commons, whether states would have equal power or whether the Congress would be made up of people that represent the same population number. And they ultimately they concluded after prayer, Benjamin Franklin called for prayer. You know, if a sparrow can't fall to the ground without his notice, can a nation rise without his aid? And they decided to have a House and a Senate. And they made the Senate with the six-year terms. Now, by the way, remember, they made the Senate to be elected not by the people, but by the legislatures of the various states.
Did you go to back that state?
Well, and that's one of the things to think about. What I often think back to is when they did create all this, while they knew that there was a big country out there, that there would be little states in the middle of the country like North Dakota that would have a lot of resources but not a lot of people, they designed all that in. They baked all of that in. What I think they maybe didn't know is that maybe people wouldn't be as noble as the Founding Fathers were, that this system was created for Madison and Franklin and people like that, Thomas Jefferson, and on. And they just probably maybe didn't anticipate the level of whether it's greed or self-servingness. Democracy has lots of values to it. But we're not just a democracy. We're a representative republic, and we answer to people in a special way, in a way that no other country does. Even other democracies don't, Scott. So I'd submit to you that the growth of our country and the diversity of our country wasn't as anticipated as it has turned out to be. And so I think things have gotten clumsier, for sure. But these things aren't easy. They're not supposed to be easy, but they should be easier than we've made them.
Yeah, and I want to get into the nitty-gritty of this shutdown because it's just baffling how a party that once fought for the little guy is now screwing the little guy and all the people that they claim to get up every day wanting to help. It's just unbelievable to me. You were at the White House for a breakfast the day before yesterday, I guess. The main topic at the breakfast, as I recall, was for President Trump to ask of you and other Republican senators to change the rules, mm-hmm. speaking of the founders,
right.
And get away from this idea that, one or two folks, if you have less than 60 senators, mm-hmm. they can stop everything.
Yeah.
You opposed the president on this. Explain why.
Well, because it gets back to the founding. I think that, first of all, for a little state like North Dakota, states like South Dakota, where you have equal power as a result of the Founding Fathers' vision of the Senate and equal power per state, we'd be giving up a tremendous amount of our leverage if we did that. It really kind of destroys the need for the Senate, to be honest.
Explain
with you.
That. Why are you giving up power as a rural state senator?
Well, because when I was a rural state House member, I was the only one from North Dakota, which means that I had 434 colleagues who were not from North Dakota. But in the Senate, there's exactly the same number of senators from North Dakota as there are from New York and California. So once you yield everything 100% to simply 51% or 50 senators plus one, you've really greatly diminished the influence and the persuasive ability of a state like North Dakota. The other thing is, as a Republican, and it's funny, I didn't know this exact statistic until yesterday or the day before I was on. Well, actually, I haven't been on it. I pre-recorded the weekend show for Tony Perkins, who I think a lot of your listeners probably know Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council. Tony Perkins really is a product of the late, great James Dobson with Focus on the Family. But anyway, Tony and I were on, and he was asking me the same question. He's a strong supporter, former House member, strong supporter of the filibuster. And as we were discussing this, it's one of the things that's not really clearly understood, but he told me, he ran the math, and he said out of the last 100 years, Republicans have had a majority in the Senate for 28 of them.
Oof.
So just imagine that. So while it might be great for 3 years in getting Donald Trump's agenda.
Let me give you the president's argument here. Speaking of the president's agenda, if you do this, so much will happen so fast it'll be good. There'll never be another Democratic Senate again. That's what he said. Kevin.
Yeah. I'm not going to sit and argue with him about it necessarily. One of my colleagues tried to at the event. Anyway, that's another story. But anyway, what I would say to him, in a quieter situation, in a quieter room probably, is that that's a nice theory, but he comes from a place that just elected a communist mayor. If you think that somehow that those people are going to change and because we're going to do all these really good conservative things under Donald Trump, that they're suddenly going to become supporters of North Dakota and Oklahoma more than New York and California.
Fair point.
It's a bit naive, I think.
All right. I have a better mission than you. You reminded me. Is it the 17th Amendment? What's the one where legislatures elect senators?
That would have been, I think, that was the 17th Amendment.
17th, okay.
Yeah, or 14th.
That'd be even a better thing to fight for. We'll talk about it when we... Back on What's on Your Mind. Kevin likes the Space Cowboy. Yeah.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah, I love it. By the way, we're brought to you today by umary.edu, an institution I love that I can't even put into words how much I love, mostly because of its great leaders. Monsignor James Patrick Shea, somebody that has a job because of our guest here, Senator Kevin Cramer, on the Board of Trustees. And you hired him. That was a good hire. Hard to replace Sister Thomas, but you did. And he and Jerome Richter and that whole team, top to bottom, are just phenomenal.
I think they would have gotten the job without me. I'm just
saying.
You
think so?
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
That is good work. And I know you were in development there and helped make that place great. So
it's fun to be part of it.
Yeah. And now you're on a different mission field. By the way, you just got a text. You're going to have to leave us here shortly.
Yeah.
Tom Holman at the bottom of the hour. Okay. John Thune has summoned you to his office.
He and some others, some of my closest friends. So as you probably know, we're close to a breakthrough on this reopening the government thing. We are. And but we need some people to let down their guard a little bit.
Republicans or Democrats?
Yes. Yeah, those people.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, mostly Democrats.
For the life of me, I can't understand Democrats looking at what's happening and saying they're okay with it because this is their constituency.
Yes.
They clearly see a greater good somewhere. Where is it?
So it's a great point, Scott. The greater good is their power. That's unfortunately the problem is that they the centralized power. But what they see since the Tuesday night elections is a gross misread of the Tuesday night elections. They think they have leverage that they didn't have before. They have exactly the same Republican Senate as they had before. In fact, they lost one Democratic House member because she's now the governor of a state.
Oh.
So they actually have no more leverage with us. It'd be like if suddenly we said, hey, we won two special elections in Oklahoma and North Dakota. Therefore, that's the new mantra for the Republican Party in America.
By the way, they overplay it. In Virginia and in New Jersey, they were not Mamdani Democrats.
No, they were
They were very moderate.
They were
so moderates. That's how they won in blue states. So I think they should get a different message out of it.
But that's their message. That's the emotional message, Scott, but I think that's waning. And anyway, so...
What's the fix? You're going to say, we're going to vote on this, we're going to vote on that, we're going to change the funding. What are you going to do?
Well, first of all, what we can't do is let them have a straight extension of this, of the Biden-Obamacare, windfall for insurance executives that so many people want. But
why do we worry about insurance executives instead of the cost of health care?
Well, because the insurance executives are sort of the proxy for supposedly the patients. Not true. And the problem with that, Scott, the clean extension is that bill that created that was during the pandemic. It was the Democrats using budget reconciliation. Not a single Republican voted for it. And it, unlike every other appropriation bill in America, it does not have Hyde Amendment protections. So there's no way the Republicans are going to agree to an extension of anything that doesn't protect the unborn.
Are we going to come out okay on this?
We're going to come out okay on that, but we're going to have a short term. We have to get the government reopened. The way things are going, you may never get out of here again if we don't get the government.
Right.
You're going to be driving.
Well, I'll stay here and yell at people because I'm crabby on behalf of the listeners,
so
I don't mind.
That's right.
Let's see. Let's go to Sterling. You like Sterling?
I
do.
I love Sterling.
Drive through Sterling a lot.
Yeah.
John, a question for Senator Kevin Cramer. Go.
Yes, Senator. I was gonna hear your thoughts on Big Mike getting $750,000 per speech. Is that possible?
I think he's referring to Michelle Obama. Just so you know.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
We all know
I mean, the man. Come on, you guys.
Well, let's just say I've never heard that before. But just so you know, I don't know what she gets for speaking, but I'm pretty sure she's not worth it. I mean, nobody's worth that much money, particularly when you're not in power, you can't even really claim that somebody's buying access.
Or a husband, gets millions.
Yeah, right.
And he is a former president, I guess.
But even at that, what value does that bring that's worth that kind of money, unless there's a previous favor?
Part of me says, hey, it's the free market. If they're willing to pay for it, it's fine.
That's right.
On the other hand, really connect the dots here, right? So maybe that's why Obama, who'd run or done nothing, runs for president so his wife can charge $750,000. It's a little bit of grift.
The other question it raises for me is, what access do they have, even though she's a former first lady, who, by the way, is not even really never even really liked that job, if you know, to be honest.
Or her husband, last I can check. Yeah.
But it does make you wonder, what other power do they bring that we may not see that's in plain view?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's weird. Do you have any doubt that Barack Obama's corrupt and been part of a, I don't know what you want to call it, deep state, whatever. But, I mean, look at what we factually know legally about what happened from day one after the president was elected in 2016. This guy's corrupt, isn't he?
Well, he pulls a lot of levers, right? He pulls a lot of levers. A lot of people still lean on him for their own counsel and advice. He runs, probably pretty much runs the Democratic Party in this country, along with George Soros and others. So, the company he keeps would certainly,
Let's see. We have Roger in West Fargo next year. Roger, what's on your mind? Roger, are you there? Going once? Going
we
twice.
Lost Roger.
Kevin? Roger left us. Okay, Grant and Hedinger for Kev. Go ahead quickly. Got about a couple minutes left. Give me your best minute, Grant. Hey, what do you got for Senator Kramer?
Hey, since Mr. Kramer there was part of North Dakota, has been in government for a long time, I would like to know, since when the government shut down, no federal income tax, no taxes on anyone's check should be taken out while you're shut down. It stays here. And we're immune to your guys' shenanigans. There would be so much more money in the economy and spending power just in this month of time from you guys not being able to get anything done. I would like the state of North Dakota to construct something so we are immune to this and our citizens can benefit, because this is going to happen again. And because you served in North Dakota and now you're national, I would like some type of outline of how to accomplish that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think he may be confused about a couple of facts. The beauty of the United States Senate is you're not national, right? Your state is now represented equally to California and New York. And by the way, October was one of the most productive legislative months in the United States Senate.
Quiet secret, but I love it.
I mean, it's really kind of amazing, isn't it? In fact, think of North Dakota. The things we were able to accomplish in that National Defense Authorization Act, remarkable. The things we were able to accomplish with the working class families tax cuts, remarkable for North Dakota, for business, for agriculture. So, and by the way, with regard to not getting taxed, remember all of this stuff that's happening that people aren't getting paid for. By that, I mean employees, tragic as it is, are happening. I mean, you still have a Customs and Border Protection. You still have an FBI.
Your Capitol Police here.
You still have Capitol Police here. You still have air traffic controllers. You still have TSA. You know, FSA offices are open. SNAP benefits are still going out. I mean, all of that stuff is still happening while the government is, quote, shut down.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, I'm not, I think he was.
I think what I would glean from him, just quick answer on this, if you would, you need some sort of safety valve so this crap doesn't happen.
I think we should. I've always supported multiple bills. We had a vote, in fact, on a bill that Ron Johnson introduced to prevent government shutdowns from ever happening. We talked about it this morning at breakfast. I had breakfast with a few Democrats and a few Republican colleagues. We talked about it, and I said, we've got to bring up a bill like that when we're not in the heat of the moment, when it's not emotional, and protect the entirety of our country from government shutdowns.
Are the Democrats you had breakfast with this morning going to talk to their dear leader and say, let's fix this?
Well, I can only speak for me, and I'm